This podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell on Hills Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello. Hey, Amanda, did you check what microphone you're using just to make sure you didn't break it?
I absolutely did not.
Okay. In case you guys are wondering, Amanda has not been using her fancy mic for we don't even know how long.
No clue. No. Just been sitting here collecting dust.
I don't think you even know what mic. Well, I don't even think you know what mic you were using before.
It's whatever one is in my computer, because that's what it has the operating system in my computer next to the microphone. Where's that? I don't know.
But well, it makes you. Yeah, I was going to say it's not bad quality. Like I didn't say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, welcome back. Hello, everyone. How Amanda, how are you? I'm not asking everyone how they are. I don't like everyone. Ugh, I like our listeners. Yeah. But how are you?
I'm pretty good. We've had a long week. We got the car situation fixed. I told you about that. We got James's car back for good now. We're back on track. We are on track. Like we got past the terrible twos a while back, and I'm pretty sure we are directly on track to three-nagers, I think is what people call them.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
You sound really happy to have a three-nager.
No, I'm not a fan. She does not listen at all. And no, like she used to listen, which is weird because I was talking to one of the other daycare moms about this the other day, about mm-hmm. her son doing the same thing. She used to listen at school. And I was like, you know what? You want to push boundaries at home, but you listen when we're out in public. I can take that. That's just fine. No, I still hate it. That's a lie. But still, I would prefer it be that way. No, mm-hmm. now they're telling me she is not listening in school. Ooh. She doesn't listen at home. I'm like, okay, you're making me look like a bad mom.
And don't like, all right, this. We're going to box now.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Nothing's been working. I put her in timeout last week. Bryce, I swear to God, she laughed at me.
She probably did.
I did. No, like she looked me dead in my face and was smiling. And I'm like, what do you do? What do I do right now? Everything I want to do is illegal. So, James went full Korean on her. And I sent you a picture of it, actually, I think. Did I send you that picture?
No, I don't think you did.
Oh, well, allow me to text you the picture. He went full Korean on her. And by that, I mean, James's mom is Korean. And he had Annie do what she had them do as children, him and his brother. And he made her stand there holding cans of tomatoes, just like directly above her head. It's a little, we have the big cans, like the San Marzanos. No, not those. Just your typical, like, 12-ounce can of tomatoes or whatever. And she hates it. And we don't have her standing there long. I think max is like 30 seconds. Once she obviously starts getting tired, we let her go. But we can, or at least I know I can ask her, like, do you want to get your cans? And she's just like, it's quick. It's like, nope, I'm good. I'll be good, Mom.
She's like, all right, I hear you. Those tomato mm-hmm. cans are heavy. All I see is James looks like he's cooking, and she's just standing there holding cans. Middle of the kitchen. Hold these above your head. How do you get her to hold them above her head? Like, she could just be like, no, I'm not doing it.
Don't give her any ideas love of God, because I don't know why, but for whatever reason, like, I don't know. Fear of God. Is that a thing? Fear of parents? We just tell her, like, we have her stand there and I'm like, okay, here's these cans. And she just takes them and I'm like, hold them above your head. And she just puts her hands up and she just goes with it.
Wave them around like you just don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, don't tell her that part, but...
No, I don't. She's actually not allowed to wave them around. Or she'll, like, rest them against each other, too. Almost like she's making an A with her hand. She's nope, apart.
The genie up. In a bottle.
Yeah, no cheating. No...
No genie.
Genie in a tomato can.
Well, she hasn't learned that yet, so I won't give her any ideas yet.
Yeah. Hopefully this keeps working. If not, I don't know what we're going to do.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'll let you know.
That's fun, I guess.
So, how about you?
Yeah, I've got a couple stories since we're so shellfish. They're both about Mill or my dad.
Okay.
So we're going to start with Millie's story because my mom came over a few weeks ago. And I haven't told you this yet, but she came over a few weeks ago to help paint the baby's room. Mm-hmm. And obviously she had to bring Camille and my nephews because it was a Wednesday when Cody was off of work and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know if it was the same day or the following day, whatever. Camille texts me and she's like, "Did I leave my football hat at your house?" And I was like, "What?" And it's a beanie. It's like a football. It's a beanie for her football league. Okay. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I have it." So I started teasing her because, like I've told you, I can. Like, what would I do without teasing her? And then, because I'm so mean, I was like, "Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you're getting it back because Maisie really likes it. She likes to put it on her butt and do some toots in it." And so she was getting frustrated with me, or I assume she was getting frustrated with me because she was like, "I just want my hat back." And so I giggle at this. So I was like, "You're gonna have to ask Maisie. Like, I don't know. She's not really in a sharing mood. Blah blah blah." As we kept going, I decided I'm gonna get a picture of Maisie with this hat on, and they have like a soft football toy that she happened to be playing with at the time.
So, perfect. Maisie knows what's up.
Let me send you this picture. So I sent Camille. It was the perfect picture. You can't tell it's a beanie, but she's got the beanie on her head with like a little football between her paws. And so Mill was not thrilled with that.
Yeah. I think it's a very cute picture.
It is a very cute picture. I mean, Maisie wanted the hat off of her head ASAP, but I still giggled. Because you know what? You snooze, you lose.
I think this is exactly what Millie's going to want for Christmas, a framed copy of this photo.
I think what she's going to want is her hat back, but it's now Maisie's, so she's got to bargain with that dog.
Yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree asking for Bryce.
I can't do anything. Maisie's claimed it, so. The other story. Would you like to hear how my dad got kicked out of the latest football game for my little sister?
Yes, because I got this text. And I never responded to it. And then I saw it and I was like, "Oh my God, I missed the story." So yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I would love to hear it.
Let's remember, I told my dad early on, like, remember, they're little girls. Mm-hmm. This is not because he was yelling at the little girl. So okay. I was not there. So I get this story. So basically I call my sister. I can't even remember what I called my sister about. And you know what I do? I was sharing a new vacation spot I wanted to go to with her, and I needed her to agree to help me con my mom and dad to go, which wasn't hard. They're like, "Yeah, we'll go."
Okay.
So, anyways, so and we started talking, and she's like, "Yeah, Dad got kicked out of Mill's football game." I was like, "Why? What happened?" I guess it was in this. Let me just tell you, this happened in the first quarter of the game.
How long are the quarters?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. So my sister kind of explained, she's like, "It'd been a little bit of a rough game already. Like, there were flags thrown only on Mill's team and like all this stuff." And she's like, "One of the flags was thrown on a parent of Mill's team."
Is that allowed?
Apparently.
Ha, I see what you're
saying. I guess the parent didn't agree with the call that the ref made and said something, and they were like, "All right, here's a flag." It's like, why? Anyways, so my dad was trying to call a timeout, and so he's over, you know, there's like three or four refs on the field. None of them are listening. So he's over there yelling, trying to get them to do a timeout. And he got frustrated and got on the field and I guess walked up right behind the ref and just yelled timeout. And I guess it scared her. And they were like, "Please leave." So that's why he got kicked out of her football game. And then he probably made him mad because they were also trying to get him to go to the parking lot. And he's like, "No, I didn't even park over there. I parked over by the school." And so he wouldn't go the way that they wanted him to.
I mean, at the risk of agreeing with your dad, I see his point.
Yeah. I'm not arguing.
Yeah.
He then I guess he just went to the sidewalk because but you can't do anything. That's public property. And he just watched the game from there. And so I was like, all right, well, I mean, I guess if that works for you, that's not a big deal. But I don't really know how to react. So my dad, when I called him later that day, I didn't even ask him about it. I was like, whatever. I don't know if he's going to be grumpy about it and I don't want to deal with it. But the next day when I talked to him about it, he was all laughing. It's like, I guess can't yell.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, you did warn him.
I told him there were little girls. I didn't necessarily mean all of them were going to be on his team. Some of them are the refs, okay?
Yes.
They might be a little more sensitive than the girls on his team.
To me, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like she had her panties in a twist.
Yeah. So that's how my dad got kicked out of the football game. First quarter.
You need that on a plaque.
Congratulations on getting kicked out in the first quarter.
Yes. First, but it has to be a shoe, like a cleat.
First quarter ejections. Yeah. I just thought it was funny that he even got kicked out because I'm like, why? What was the point? Like, if you were trying to yell timeout and they're blatantly ignoring you.
That sounds like a them problem.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out how you give the parent of a player a flag.
I don't know.
Hey, you have coached small children's sports. Can a ref give the parent of a player a flag? They can eject parents from the, but the parents are like, make them leave the park?
Well, yeah, I've done that from my younger days.
But you put a pin in that. But they can give a flag to a parent's,
like a penalty to the like parent.
There was a basketball game, college basketball game a while back, I think it was in Texas, where the fans were throwing shit on the court, and they penalized the team for their fans throwing stuff out on the court. They gave technical fouls to the other team.
Okay, that kind of makes sense. I feel like
that's different.
It would be the same kind of thing.
But this person got penalized for disagreeing, I assume, vocally disagreeing with a call.
Uh-huh.
So, wait, you said you?
So, I have worked at a rec center I did some reffing for like little league, like I did like kindergarten most of the time, but when we did basketball season, I would, depending on the staff, I was either a site supervisor or covering for whoever kept the score, because I hated reffing basketball. It was super annoying. But I've ejected parents. I had one parent that wouldn't get off the court, and I told them, and I, first of all, for those games, though, for that one specifically, they were a little bit older, and we had hired, professional referees.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually let those refs make the call. So if you want him ejected, tell me. We actually had to call police on him, because he wouldn't leave.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Yeah. And I think there was another one that it was, like, I don't even think we ejected him. I think it was, I had to pull him aside and be like, if you don't stop, I will eject you. Like, I'm not doing this today.
But okay. When you said
going on the court.
Got you. When you said you ejected, or you've ejected or whatever you said, I understood it as you yourself got ejected from a game. No. And I was like, no, I need details on that.
Nope. Not that juicy, guys. I'm sorry. This was more work. And I actually had to get permission from supervisors to eject people. So every time it happened, I had a call. I had to be like, Angel, can you please? And I tell her the situation, and she's always like, yep, I'll put the paperwork in, or whatever it was she had to do. I don't know what she had to do. I think she just had to text people and say, parent being ejected from so-and-so site.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what I meant by it. I myself have not been ejected from a game, but that's because most of the time I'm not paying attention.
I think that would do it. If you got ejected and you're not paying attention, that's just talent.
I could figure it out, I'm sure. And I think the two that I did, they kept coming onto the court. And I kept having to tell them, you cannot be on the court. Not even the coaches could be on the court.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. Get out of here. You're out of here.
I think that's baseball.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't what do you say? Get out.
I said get off the court or go home. You have two options. Okay. Sit down or leave. I probably didn't say it that confidently to them because I was only like 16, 17 at the time. But
yeah, we all know you were still sassy.
Yeah. Because I get it from my dad. Who, like I said, he essentially, he did not say this and he denies saying it, but he essentially told the person that was trying to get him to the parking lot, the wrong direction of where he parked. Mm-hmm. He basically told them to F off and mind their business. In a nutshell, I'm going to get a call and he's going to be like, that's not what happened.
But you just said that's not what happened. You said in a nutshell.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
So this is our version of events.
We could also make up more. We could be like, he totally body slammed the ref and was yelling timeout at him.
He keyed her car. He keyed timeout into her car.
Yes. So when she went, when she was done with work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He also probably went back to the field and burned timeout into the field. You know? I can't confirm that one, but
I'm pretty sure he's going to get a tattoo of it tomorrow.
He probably already has one.
It's across his knuckles. TIMEOUT exclamation point.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So. But anyways, yeah, so he got ejected first quarter. I'm really sad I did not go to that game. Because last year I went to all of Mill's games. I haven't gone to any this year. Sorry, Mill. But last year I went to all of her games. This year I'm like, I'm not making the drive. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too tired. I'm too fat. I can't do it. Just, I can't. Okay.
Well, next year you'll get to bring the babies to all of the games.
Don't be making promises like that.
Yeah, I think it's too late.
All right, I guess next year I'm taking babies to some of the games.
Actually, yeah, not all of them, because driving with, no.
Mel, I'll give them pom-poms and let them be your little cheerleaders. How's that?
You've already got two babies. Just put a pom-pom on each hat, and then there you go. And whenever she makes a goal or what? What sport am I? I'm still in soccer. Sorry.
I don't know what sport you're in. Whenever there's a touchdown for her team. Yes.
Whenever there's a touchdown, you can just shake the babies. Miss pom-poms.
I'm pretty sure that's shaken baby syndrome, and that's illegal.
Oh. Yeah, I think we covered that way back in...
like, early episodes.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The Australian woman. Catherine Knight.
Yeah, that was like way, way early on. That was,
yeah.
I don't even know that we were in double digits. We were not.
I don't think we were. I covered her very early on.
That was episode 3, guys.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like, we still had Brie. We were still getting our feet under us. Like, we weren't sure what we were doing. And not that we're sure what we're doing now, but.
Yeah, still no. But that was early days.
So anyways, well, that's my update for this episode.
I enjoyed that thoroughly.
Okay. Well, I knew you would, and I knew you had a bad week. And so I actually offered to tell Amanda via text before today, but she never responded. So it was a one-time offer that timed out. So even if you had texted me the next day, I'd been like, nope, you're SOL.
Sucks to suck.
So, you know, get what you get. But
sorry, I got distracted momming.
It's fine. Anyways, would you like to talk about some socials?
I would love to hear about them. What do we have?
Well, we have a lot of socials. We've got Facebook, Helen Heels Podcast, Instagram, Helen Heels Podcast, X, Helen Heels Pod, because they still cut me off. I don't know why they have a character limit.
I don't know.
Anyways, we also have our link tree. So if you just Google Helen Heels Podcast link tree, that'll come right up, and that has all the links for everything. We have Discord. So if you want to join us on Discord, we have our Patreon, we have our Gmail or our email, helenheelspodcast@gmail.com. We've got all the things, all the goodies that you guys can join us on different platforms. And then if you guys do enjoy listening to us bullshit and talk shit about my dad, because we can, or even the stories, which I don't think any of us enjoy, but we also enjoy being pissed off, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you do enjoy those, make sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well so that we can keep growing and keep providing additional episodes for you guys. Okay, well, I think we're done with this episode, so I don't have to listen to Amanda's.
Oh, no.
Damn.
God, let's get it over with.
I've been avoiding it all week, okay?
I have not opened this up since we last recorded. Usually I'll try to like read over my notes, you know, if it's been a couple of days. But this week I'm like, no, not doing it. Okay. So last week I accidentally surprised y'all with a two-parter, my bad. But here's the two to that parter. I introduced y'all to Donnell Clyde Cooley. He was a one-quarter Native American fiddler from Oklahoma. He moved to California and ended up making it big as a Western swing musician. He was also mean. He was a womanizer. He was a cheater. And just an all-around piece of soggy brown lettuce, this man was.
I mean, that's one way to describe him.
He sucks. He left his first wife and son for a younger woman, Ella May, and they had two children together in a marriage where Ella was abused and neglected regularly. And when we left off, Cooley's fame was fading, but he had announced his retirement from entertaining, and he started doing other random ventures. And his latest was a huge water park in the desert. Since he was now working closer to home, he started spending more time at home.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
Sounds good. It's not. By this time of his life, he was a high-functioning alcoholic. He was constantly drunk, and people said that he would chase the whiskey with pills. So now he's also abusing other forms of inebriance.
He is mixing, and he's mixing things he shouldn't be mixing.
Yes. He's mixing. He's something else. So around this time, he was high, he was drunk, he was pissed, and he was absolutely convinced that Ella May was cheating on him. He monitored her phone calls, demanded details whenever she left the house. He wanted to know where she went, who she went with, why she left. And one example I was able to find, she went to the grocery store, you know, to get groceries for their family. And this was said to turn into an hour-long interrogation.
Jesus.
Which doesn't make sense because, like, she came home with groceries. What more proof of where she's been do you need?
He would be one of those people with an iPhone with, like, Find My Friends. He'd be checking location every 5 seconds.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I do that to where Cody. You're
at all times.
I do that to Cody when he's driving home.
I think I constantly share my Snapchat location with James, but even that's only so good, you know, if you only open it every couple hours or whatever. But So Ella May, she did eventually become friends with two of Cooley's business associates. And from everything I could find, this was a platonic friendship. But Cooley was convinced that these men were gay together. And they were luring Ella May into a free love sex cult.
Okay, cool.
Uh-huh. How he came to this decision, I don't know. I did not look into it because this is a leap.
Maybe it was like a dream and he's so confused by reality and dreams, he's just like putting them together.
That very well could be.
Because, you know, you're mixing alcohol and drugs.
He was also ridiculously homophobic. So, just a shit person.
He's kind of something else.
And not in the good way. No. Bless his heart negatively.
I thought it was normally negative.
It can go either way.
Well, I thought more often than not it was normally negative.
For me personally, it depends. If it's a child, no. It is almost exclusively in a good, like, I know, actually bless their heart. But if it's an adult, it's almost always negative.
I don't say it to children.
Oh, I don't say it to them. I say it about them.
I don't say it about children.
Like, if I'm watching a kid and they just, like, face plant, oh, unless it's my kid, she'll be fine. But other kids, like, oh, God, bless her heart.
For your kid, you go bless her heart in a negative fashion.
Frequently.
You're actually bless my heart, aren't you? You're like, please bless my heart. Someone help me out here. For the love
of God, bless my heart. Somebody, somewhere.
Somebody help me out here.
Now, both of these men, they would later testify that they never had sexual relations with LMA, but they were kind of helping her out. Like, everybody that actually knew Cooley personally knew he was a piece of crap. So she had apparently been sending them money in secret to invest for her. And then they would, like, they invested it in their names for her. And when she was finally able to get a divorce and get away from Cooley, they were going to give her that money and help her out.
Okay. So, I mean, he's kind of... This is not to defend Cooley, but he did have a gut feeling, just the wrong type of gut feeling.
I guess you could say that, but this was, like, throughout their marriage. Like, well, even early on.
In the sense with accusing these guys of inappropriate relations, from his perspective, them investing for her would be an inappropriate relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's helping to leave.
Easily, yeah.
He just twisted it a different way.
Yeah. When Ella eventually did ask Cooley for a divorce, he flew into another rage. And then he filed for divorce before she could, claiming incompatibility. And this was even in the newspapers. Like, I don't know how this happened around this time, but there are newspaper articles saying that Cooley filed for a divorce from LMA because they're incompatible. And it's just like, this. Okay.
I mean, I guess. Okay. I mean, not wrong. You're incompatible.
Yeah.
But I mean, also, Cooley, you might be incompatible for everyone.
Yeah. But yeah, after he did this, he would, you know, a couple days go by, he turns around, he starts begging her to stay with him. Please don't go. Stay with me. I need you. Typical abusive behavior, honestly.
Yeah, manipulation and all that fun stuff.
In early 1961, Ella Mae was hospitalized for a nervous breakdown. And while she was in the hospital, she told doctors more than once that she was afraid of her husband. And there were actually stories that at one point he was supposed to come down there and a nurse come into the room and she locked herself in the bathroom and refused to come out until the nurse was like, hey, it's okay. Your husband's not here. It's just me. It's okay. He's nowhere around. Like, they had to convince her to come out of the bathroom. She was terrified of this man.
Rightfully so.
While in the hospital, she allegedly hired a divorce attorney and told this attorney that Cooley beat her, the abuse was getting worse. She was afraid that he would kill her. And if she tried to take the kids, he said that he would kill them too.
Seems a little extreme.
Unnecessary
also.
Yeah. But like I said it in the first episode, this man, he got what he wanted. He always got what he wanted. After she was released from the hospital, Cooley hired a private investigator to check up on Ella. And what he wanted to build his case for divorce and just screw her out of stuff as much as he possibly could. And that was this PI's job.
You think PIs feel good about when they have to do shit like that?
I don't know how they could do that, really. Like, if it were LMA hiring him, I could see that. I could be like, oh yeah, I'll help you get away from your piece of crap husband. But I don't know. Maybe he paid him well and people say money talks. I couldn't do it.
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I just said, I don't know.
While all this is going on, Cooley, I mean, he continues to beat her. That doesn't stop. And harasses her into admitting she was cheating on him. In March, he started forcing her to sign documents transferring property to him. And basically, like, everything they had together, she was taking her name off of it, signing her name away. And some of the pages that she apparently signed were just blank.
Why?
Anita? Huh?
Like, just a blank paper? Had nothing just to do with anything?
So he could fill it in later, whatever he wanted. This was, like, land, property, house, like, everything. And then some of them were blank, so he could, I guess, so he could just be like, oh, her name is on this, too. Nope, she signed this. Go ahead.
No, I don't like this.
Anita Eros would later, and Anita is the woman, his lady on the side that he had. She would later testify in court that on March 24th, Cooley called her and told her that he was divorcing Ella Mae and he wanted them to get married soon after. And she said that she just laughed and was like, yeah, okay. She thought he was joking. And then a few days later, Cooley called Anita again and told her that they would be getting married in 7 weeks.
I'm sorry. First of all, I know it's possible. I know it's possible. But 7 weeks is a really tight timeline. Some yeah. venues are booked up for years. How?
But for Spade Cooley, this the feels king like a... of Western swing?
I don't really care about what he is. He's retired because he was unpopular. But I did not forget that detail. Thank you. You're this welcome. Feels Thank like you. A Monica and Chandler situation, but not quite. It's like mm-hmm. Monica booking the wedding venue without being engaged.
But hey, it worked in her favor.
I mean, that's for Monica. That's different, though.
Yeah, no, he sucks still. And this is still, I can't imagine what that lady had to have been thinking. I mean, I imagine she was probably thinking something along the lines of, oh, he's drunk. Like, this, whatever. He's just talking.
He's a psychopath.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this really bothered me. During this phone call, he also would force Melody, his daughter, to tell Anita that she wanted her for a mother.
Okay, that's okay. Mm-hmm.
And on top of like everything else that we're unfortunately about to get into that he does to this girl, like that's just that's something else. March 31st, Ella Mae was in the car with Cooley when she jumped out of it as it was moving. Ella Mae suffered a black eye, brush burns on her arms and legs, and she bruised her ankle, tailbone, and back. And Ella Mae would later tell Melody that Cooley had pushed her out of the car.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
Based off of this man so far, I don't really...
Based on what Melody grew up seeing, she did not doubt it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look back because this is in 61 and they had Melody in 1946. So math.
What year really? Was she born? What year was she born again?
She was born in 46.
46 and this was in 61?
Yeah.
So she'd be like 15? Yeah.
Yeah. 15 when all of this is going on.
So she's probably just trying to survive it herself, though.
Mm-hmm. On April 2nd, Cooley called his private investigator and told him that Ella Mae wanted to confess her affairs to him over the phone. And while on the phone, she claimed that she spent 30 to 45 minutes in a motel with a man the previous fall. She told him the date and name of this hotel, but she refused to tell him a name of the man that she had the affair with. And she claimed that she got sick even thinking about it, did not want to talk about it. And on this call, the PI makes this weird comment about Clyde being a forgiving man, Clyde Cooley. And Ella Mae replies, I'll love him the rest of my life. And you can find this recording and actually listen to it, and it's chilling.
So who was obviously I know who was forcing her to say it, but like mm-hmm. how was he forcing her? Like, that's my question.
That we don't know. From what I've read, I think he basically would just beat her until she submitted whenever he wanted something.
I hate that.
He was very relentless. And Okay, so her calling this PI, or well, him calling the PI and her telling him that she did cheat on Cooley, this is something multiple people said that Cooley did. He would just force LMA to tell people that she cheated on Cooley. One was they went on a cruise or something, and she just told some people they were talking to that she had an affair with another man. Just really, really strange. Not even like coming up normally in conversation. Just really strange.
I mean, why are they on a cruise? Like, this is after they filed for divorce, right?
No, this is...
This is before?
This is before. Yeah. The PI, her telling the PI happened while they were... during the divorce. But this is something that he just made her do, I guess, periodically.
She was like, yep, sure. At some point, you gotta think. She's like, you know what? I might as well cheat on him if he thinks I am already. Like, I know that sounds horrible, but he's a horrible man.
Yeah,
and he's already forcing her to say these things. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying anything about her character like there. I'm just saying she might have just been like, yep, sure did. I'm going to on this cruise too. Bye.
I think it says a lot about her character that she never did.
I know, right?
On April 3rd, 1961, Cooley had a meeting that afternoon about this water park. And the people that were there that day said he was very drunk. He's very angry. He was just in a terrible mood. He lashed out at people for no reason. And then at one point, he just stormed out of the place. Now, apparently, he drove home and, again, started interrogating LMA. And finally, she reached her breaking point. She had had enough of this abuse. She told him that she was leaving him for good. Unfortunately, for people in an abusive relationship, this is the most dangerous part. Is leaving. Melody, on the stand, she would later testify and tell her part of the story, her side. And she said that she got home at about 6:20 that night. And she and her brother had been staying with a neighbor when LMA and Cooley called and told her to come home. And LMA said that she was going to explain everything that was going on right now. So when Melody got there, she said that what she did, because she said, like, she just, it didn't feel right. So she had the neighbor drive her back home and tell her, hey, just leave and come back and get me in 20 minutes. I don't want to stay here tonight. And that was the plan. The neighbor was going to come back, pick her up again in 20 minutes, and take her back over to the neighbor's house with her brother. When she got home, though, she walked in the door. Cooley was on the phone with his business partner, and she heard him say, don't call the police. She said that he was sweaty and he had blood on his pants. And then he put the phone down and told her, come here, I want you to see your mother. So he led her through the house, and she said it was a mess. In the living room, the tables were shoved onto one another. There was broken glass and a bottle of whiskey on the table. There was blood stains on the floor. There was a broken cup with blood and what looked like her mom's hair still on it. He led her to the bedroom where there was blood spatter on the pillows, sheets, and the box spring. There was blood stains on a rifle, a water bottle on the desk, an ashtray stand. There was blood splatter on the walls, and there was a clump of hair on the floor near the foot of the bed, and it looked like her mother's hair. Melody could hear the shower running in the bathroom, and Cooley opened the bathroom door and told LMA, get up, Melody's here, talk to her. He dragged LMA from the shower by her hair with both hands, and then he hit her head on the floor twice. And when LMA didn't move or make a noise, Cooley told Melody she had 3 minutes to get her mother up or he'd kill her. He would kill LMA.
Kind of get the feeling he's already done that, though.
He left the room. and started a countdown. So from the other room, he would yell out, 2 minutes, 1 minute left, half a minute. And Melody said she tried to help her mom, but she was just limp.
Yeah, like I said, I kind of feel like he's already...
Well, I'll tell you later. When Cooley came back, he said, time's up, Melody. And he walked into the room holding a rifle. He made Melody sit in a chair and told her she was going to watch him kill LMA.
Okay, that is just some... That's next level.
He then... Melody said that he stomped LMA's stomach 3 times. He stomped LMA's stomach 3 times. And according to the autopsy report, he left contusions in the abdominal area. And this actually split the abdominal aorta, causing a hemorrhage. And LMA was said to die an estimated 20 minutes later. So she was still alive at this point. After stomping her, Cooley leaned down and said, we'll just see if you're dead. And then he called her a slut and used his cigarette that he was smoking to burn both nipples.
What?
Melody tried to run away, and that's when Cooley grabbed her and said she had 2 more minutes to get her mom off the floor, and then he took a phone call. When he returned to the room, he took Melody into the living room. He made her sit on his lap, kissed her passionately, touched her breasts, and told her that she was going to give all of his love to her and Donnell Jr., her brother, since their mother crushed him.
That's your daughter.
So Ella was able to get away when the neighbor came back to pick her up. And she was able to get away because she told her dad that she believed the neighbor was coming back, and she didn't want the neighbor to see the house like that. And then she kissed her dad on the cheek, and as she was leaving, he told her if she said anything to police that he would kill her. So Melody left, and she ran from the house. It said she actually hid for a minute behind a trailer on the property. I think, if I remember correctly, it was the manager's trailer. It was somebody's trailer that was on the property, and she hid behind it to make sure her dad wasn't coming after her or following her. But afterwards, she ran across a field to get to the neighbor, and through tears, she told the neighbor what happened immediately.
She didn't tell the cops. He didn't say, don't tell the neighbors.
Well, she was not quiet about it. she was like, no, fuck you. Paramedics weren't called until about 11 p.m. And as just a little quick reminder, Melody got to the house at 6:20. And even when it was called, even when they called, Cooley did not call. It was called by a family friend. But Cooley did change clothes and toss his bloody clothes in the washing machine before they showed up. LMA Cooley was pronounced dead on arrival to the hospital. And the injuries, according to court documents, are as follows. LMA's body was covered in bruises and abrasions. Her left eye was black. Her nose was bruised. Her lips were bruised and split. She had cracks on her chin. She suffered injuries to the neck, shoulder, chest, arms, hips, wrist, and legs.
So all over.
All over. She had an abrasion on the right side of the right breast, and the nipple was blackened, discolored, and partially separated from the body. She had deep bruising of the neck muscles, a break in the hyoid bone, a break in the thyroid cartilage in the windpipe, which indicated strangulation, bloody material in the vaginal and rectal orifices, and splits in the vaginal and anal rectal mucous membrane. They found a broom in the bedroom with mucus substance and blood extending 5 or 6 inches down the handle.
Oh.
Expert testimony would later state that it was not transferred by hand contact. Blood. So when, you know, it wasn't like he had blood on his hands and then grabbed the broom. It was not that kind of transfer. Bloodstains on the bed were consistent with mutilation of the anal and vaginal area with the broom handle. But the cause of death was ruled to be internal bleeding from a ruptured aorta, which we know happened after everything else as Melody watched.
I hate this guy so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was kind of like a national treasure, I guess. No, fuck him. Fuck him.
Sorry. That's not a treasure?
Not at all.
What's the opposite of a treasure? Garbage? He's national garbage? Doo-doo.
Yeah. National garbage. National septic waste.
National bullshit is what he is.
Oh. So, from what I found, the hospital sees this when she gets there, and they call police, because they're like, this is not normal. Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
So they call police, and a sheriff responded, and Cooley told the sheriff that he may have slapped his wife once or twice. But these injuries came from her jumping out of the car a few days earlier and falling in the shower.
Sir, that...
You didn't even try.
No.
And when the sheriff asked why he, a known fiddle player, this is how he, you know, made it to where he is, why he had knuckles that were swollen and bruised like a prize fighter's, Cooley had absolutely no explanation.
Well, I mean, that's because he didn't think that far ahead.
No, because he's stupid. He was charged with first-degree murder, and he collapsed a few days after being arrested while he was in jail, and his lawyer claimed that he hadn't ate since the murder. Go to hell, I don't care. I think it's a lie. I think it's a lie. I don't think he felt bad about this at all.
Oh, of course not.
At the trial, Cooley claimed not guilty and not guilty due to insanity at his attorney's suggestion. And since he claimed the insanity, he was examined by three different court-appointed psychiatrists. He was sane. All three of them said he's fine. Send him to court.
Just manipulative.
Yes. The trial took place in Bakersfield. Melody Cooley testified against her dad in court.
Good for her.
And that's, yes, like, at 15, guys. Like, she saw all this and then testified against her dad. And that's actually the picture of Melody. That's, oh, I'm sorry. She was 14 years old when she testified.
She was probably almost 15.
Yeah. Just, oh my gosh. As Melody was testifying, Clyde Cooley fainted.
We know he's an actor, though.
Yes, he is. And he does have heart problems, and I don't care. I don't give a shit. Cooley's private investigator also testified against him.
I was going to say, against him or for him? Like, where are we at with this guy?
No. I don't know if it was technically against him, but from what I've read, it didn't help. Because he told the court about the phone call that he had with Ella May on her quote-unquote affairs. And then he said that he did investigate this, and he called the motel that she said that she was at. And they have no record of her staying there. He testified that he found no evidence that she had ever been unfaithful. Dorothy Davis, this is the friend that called the paramedics that night when they found Ella May.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy Davis testified that Ella May allegedly told her that she had been intimate with Roy Rogers, who was basically Cooley's co-worker. He was like a stand-in for him. She claims that she had been intimate with Roy Rogers on a trip to Texas years earlier, but Dorothy said that she did not believe this. She said that Ella May was under emotional duress at the time, and when they asked Dorothy why would she admit this if she didn't do it, Dorothy said she didn't know. But we have multiple other, I mean, just the PI alone said that she claimed that she had these affairs when she didn't.
It's and other people for also came forward.
Yeah. He was making her say these things. Now, Clyde Cooley, He was his own star witness. If y'all could see the eye roll Bryce just rolled. The eyes that Bryce just rolled.
No, it was pretty rough. It was...
it looked like it hurt a little.
God, they might have gotten stuck that way. I don't know.
He used his time on the witness stand to lie and victim blame. Are we shocked?
No.
He claimed that the day of the murder, Ella May had come clean to him about her affairs.
Oh, she
admitted to her affair with Roy Rogers and coolly claimed that Roy Rogers, his ex-best friend, would sneak into his house in Willow Springs while he was doing his TV show back in L.A. And that would be their rendezvous time. He also claimed that Ella May had planned to join the sex cult that he said his two business partners, his two homosexual business partners, were trying to get her to join. She was going to do that. Okay. And when he was pressed for more info about this, he went on a tangent about the homosexual menace in America.
That's not the question, sir.
That's not the question. And so he was asked, okay. Let's throw that to the side. How do you know your business partners are gay? And he claimed this, okay, this made me mad. This is an exact quote. They brought some boys up to my ranch that were completely on the limp wrist side. What?
He's a jackass, is what he is.
Also, while on the stand, he continued to deny that he had ever hit his wife.
Hold on, wait, no. You already told the sheriff you slapped her a couple times. You're so full of shit. On top of that, your daughter witnessed you see it. Like, she witnessed mm-hmm. you stomp on her mother.
Ugh. Yeah. Stomp on her, burn her with a cigarette, drag her by the hair.
And then you sexually assaulted your daughter.
Mm-hmm. He said that she went into the shower alone. He did not push or shove her. And then there was a terrible thud. He ran to check on her, but she was unconscious. And he said that he rubbed his wrist, breathed in her mouth, put cold towels on her head, and prayed.
He is so full of shit. Like, it's kind of painful how much shit he has coming out of his mouth.
I am a shit professional, and I do not know the extent of shit that this man just spews. After I said that out loud, that sounded way more gross than it did in my head.
I understood what you were saying, if it makes you feel better.
I'm not taking it back, because he's gross.
I mean, he's a shitty person.
Yes. He's the shittiest of people.
I mean, he's up there, yeah. He might be top 100.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like surprised that I had never heard of this story, honestly. Because a lot of what I read, I had to find the court documents to find a lot of this disgusting stuff that I didn't want to read, but I do it anyway. A lot of stuff is very frustratingly skewed. I read a lot of sources that were like, him and his wife didn't get along. They got into an argument and this is not an argument and he killed her. Just the autopsy alone, the autopsy report alone, that is not just an argument.
Right.
He tortured her.
Oh, yeah.
When prosecutor asked why Melody, his own daughter, would have made up such a horrible story about what happened, Clyde said she was mad at him because he wouldn't let her date older boys.
I don't think that's really...
Later, in the trial, Clyde said, rockets ran through my brain when Ella May told me of her desire to join a free love cult. I must have hurt her terrible.
Oh.
So okay. Did you do it or did you not do it? Did you hit her? Did you never hit her?
I'm confused on what he believes.
I don't even know if he knows what he believes.
I'm wondering if he's still kind of hung up on the concept of insanity, so he's trying to like kind of make himself look that way.
I wonder if he was still drunk.
He might have been sober, and that might have been confusing for him.
Yeah. Could be. He lost reality.
That feels like a him problem, though, if you ask me about it.
It feels like a him problem that he pressed onto other people. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know for sure, but it does feel like a him problem.
The prosecution argued that Mr. Cooley is not normal. He is abnormal. He has sadistic tendencies and a dual personality. And he also said that Ella Mae was victim of murder by torture.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Mm-hmm. This trial lasted 1 month, and a jury of 10 men and 2 women deliberated for 19 hours. I don't know why it took that long, but maybe they're just arguing semantics.
Maybe Clive the men Cooley, were like, if she really pushed him to that point.
And the women were like, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Clyde Cooley was convicted of murder on August 19th, 1961. Cooley withdrew his insanity plea, and he was sentenced to life in prison. And Judge William L. Bradshaw took his poor health into account and opted against the death penalty. Fuck him and his health. I don't care. Mm-hmm. He was described as a model prisoner, which... Okay.
That's because he's around other men. He's not tough around other men. He can only be tough around someone that's smaller and weaker than him.
Bryce, he never went to prison. He went... I lost my spot. I'm sorry. He never went to prison. When the doctors examined him when he was being processed, they said that he suffered from mood swings and extreme bouts of depression. Enough to classify him as mentally disturbed. So they found him unfit for San Quentin, where he was originally headed. Because he wasn't just going to prison. He was going to prison. Like, he was sent to go to a prison.
Which he should have gone to.
Absolutely. But instead, he was sent to the California Medical Facility, a mental hospital in Vacaville. He had a private room. He taught in the music department. Some sources stated that he played in a jailhouse band. Again, not a jail. He built fiddles in the prison hobby shop. And he found religion. And he told other prisoners how he wanted to be a preacher. This infuriated me. In 1965, he said in a prison interview, I was as wrong as any person can possibly be. There can be no excuse for beating anyone.
I'm glad you can see that, sir.
I still say it's bullshit. He didn't beat, I mean, he did beat her, but he went way beyond that. He was sadistic. Yes. When Ronald Reagan was elected governor of California, mutual friends of Reagan and Cooley from the movie business started lobbying for Cooley's pardon or parole, and it worked. In August of 1969, the State Parole Board unanimously voted for Cooley's parole, and it was to take effect February 22nd, 1970. Can you imagine that happening? And he gets paroled. He gets granted parole in 1969.
What year? Okay, refresh my memory. This was happened in 61?
He was convicted of murder in August of 61. He was convicted in 61. And all of this happened in early 61.
8 years for what he did to that poor woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he would have done it to others.
How old I believe without a doubt in my mind he would have, yes. I don't care if you got sober because you didn't have a choice and you found Jesus. He's a disgusting excuse for a human being.
Yeah. So was he ever actually released? I'm asking that because the way you worded things.
Good question. So in November of 1969, now August was when they were like, yeah, you're doing great here. We're going to parole you in February 22nd, 1970. In November of 1969, Cooley was granted a 3-day furlough to perform in Oakland at a benefit concert for the Alameda County Sheriff's Department. They let him out of quote-unquote prison to go play fiddle for a bunch of law enforcement. He walked out onto the stage to the applause from 3,000 people. He played 3 songs, and then he walked off the stage into the wings. He chit-chatted with reporters and other musicians, just living it up. He was talking about how he was excited to play for the future. He was excited for his future, excited to play for his fans again. Just enjoying his time out of
enjoying his life, something he took from someone else, in a very brutal manner.
That's exactly what he was doing when he had a heart attack and he died at 59 years old.
God, I'm sorry, but good. Good.
Yeah, honestly, I don't give a shit. I'm happy.
You know what? That was probably LMA's ghost or her spirit just squeezing his heart. Like, I hope this hurts.
Yeah. I was kind of upset at first, and I was like, you know what? No. Because he got a break. He got a taste of what he used to have, what he wanted his whole life. And then it just got yoinked from him. Or he got yoinked from it.
The universe literally said, psych.
Yes. He was buried in the Chapel of Chimes Memorial Park in Alameda County. And his children, they went on to live quiet lives out of the public eye.
Good for them. Good for them.
That is the story of... Ew, he's known as Spade Cooley. Said in the first episode, I don't believe he earned that name. But that's the story of Donnell Clyde Spade Cooley.
Okay. Cool. I don't like him.
Nope, I can't stand his ass.
I feel like he manipulated his way so that he didn't have to go to prison.
Yep.
Hold on, this reminds me a little bit of Osuna. Is it Jamie Osuna?
Yes, Jamie Osuna.
Like, it's different in the sense that Jamie Osuna is fudged up in the head. Not that Spade Cooley isn't. But how, because the last I remember of Jamie Osuna is he was mental hospital now. Like, he...
After he killed his cellmate, they found him unable unfit to stand trial. And last I saw, that's kind of still where we're at. I don't know if he's in a mental hospital. I'm pretty sure he's still in very maximum security. But he's unfit for trial. So it kind of just, he's kind of in limbo trial wise.
Yeah. Well, I just remember, I had a conversation with my dad because, you know, when am I not talking to my dad? And actually I haven't talked to him today. Anyways, but he said that Jamie Osuna is a coward because of what he did. Because they're finding him unfit to stand trial, he won't face those consequences. He doesn't want to face the death penalty because he's afraid of death. And so he's basically manipulated that situation so that he can't face the death penalty or anything like that.
That makes a lot of sense. They can't execute him because he's still hung up in this other trial that's not happening. That can't happen yet.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember everything my dad said, but that's what Spade Cooley reminds me of, is he played his cards right so that he's a coward. He didn't want to go to prison. He played his cards right so that he went to a mental hospital instead.
Mm-hmm.
A psychiatric hospital. Because that was more comfortable and safer for him than being in a prison. Because for Spade Cooley, he would have been someone's bitch, for one. Secondly.
Absolutely. Because he was a very short man, too. He was not big. He was short in stature. He wasn't very muscular.
Well, I'm just like, he can be dominating when he's with people that he finds inferior to him. And he might find the people in prison inferior to him, but they're stronger, bigger, and more willing to lay the smack down on him.
Yeah. I feel like any man with a Napoleon complex that beats women, like, how brave are you really?
Right. Well, are you ready for a different story?
Yes, please.
Okay, new story. And you already asked. If it's lizard men, it's kind of, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about UFO last week, right?
Correct.
And I didn't want to do another UFO story, but instead I'm continuing UFO-esque. So it's UFO adjacent, and I'm continuing my different types of aliens story. So we've already covered the grays. We're going to cover reptilians today. And grays, you know what? I missed this. The last UFO case we said was 89. The last UFO adjacent case was Gray's, and that was episode 93. So we're still failing, okay. You guys. But
it's just not as bad.
I mean, it's still pretty bad, but it's fine. So now you get back to back. So reptilians, they're often referred to as reptoids, archons, reptiloids, saurians, draconians, and lizard people. So you're going to hear all sorts of different variations of what they're called. Now, these beings, they're believed to be humanoids that strongly resemble reptiles. They're found in fantasy, science fiction, UFOlogy, and conspiracy theories.
And in my bassinet.
And there. Okay. I don't want to know.
I call Lee my little lizard man because he's got eczema. He's got cradle cap. Like, he's got it all going on. He's an ashy, scaly little boy, so.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's my nickname for him. My term of endearment. He is my little lizard man.
Well, I mean, it could be worse, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure it could. I'm happy with him the way he is.
Fine. So the origins of where reptilians come from, obviously, it can be debated, right? Like, everything can be debated about the origins. According to a professor of political science, Michael Barkin, he poses the idea that the origins of reptilians come from the fiction of Conan the Barbarian. Conan the Barbarian was created by Robert E. Howard. Conan is a fictional hero who originated in pulp magazines. And according to Barkin, in the story, The Shadow Kingdom, which was published in 1929, that is the book that would reference or kind of spark the idea of reptilians.
I had no idea Conan the Barbarian was that old. Like, I knew he was old, but he old.
Yeah, he's super old.
Okay.
Yeah. So the 1929 work would reference dragonmen who had once had a mighty civilization, Yes, it does reference dragonmen, or it pulls inspiration from dragonmen. And dragonmen once had a mighty civilization, which came from Helena Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine, which was written in 1888. So Helena wrote The Secret Doctrine. She references dragonmen in that one. And in Robert E. Howard's telling, in The Shadow Kingdom, he pulled inspiration from that, and he would describe them as serpent men. So he described them as having human bodies and snake heads.
Ew.
In Howard, I know, right? In
snake Howard, head?
Yeah.
Not even a lizard head. Oh, gross. How do they even see? Like, how does it sit on the neck? Does it just go straight up, or does it, like, curve to where they're looking at
curves?
That's gross. No, okay. I hate it so much.
There was a physical reaction to that.
I would much rather a lizard man than a snake man. That's foul.
I don't know what to tell you. Anyways, so in Howard's telling, the serpent men were able to imitate humans at will. And so they're shapeshifters, they have mind control abilities, and they use that to infiltrate humanity. And these beings lived in underground passages, and I guess they just kind of did their humanity infiltration in Howard's retelling, right?
Okay.
And so...
So they lived in the sewers until they wanted to come up and hang out with humans for a little bit.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
This really started the introduction of reptilians, so in my opinion, I would credit Helena Blavatsky and The Secret Doctrine, because technically she was like, yeah, dragon men, and he just flipped words, you know?
Yeah.
Fine.
So she was like dragon men, and he was like, no, snake men.
Serpent men. What did he call them?
Snake.
A slithery snake. Anyways, other authors would draw inspiration from Robert E. Howard's telling. So Clark Ashton Smith, he would use Howard's serpent men in his stories. In the 1940s, Maurice Doreal, or also known as Claude Doggins, he would write a pamphlet called Mystery of the Gobi. And in his writing, he told of a serpent race that had bodies like men. You guessed it, snakes, or a snake head. And these creatures could shapeshift and take human form. And Doreal would even write a poem known as the Emerald Tablets with these creatures. So within his writing, he wrote this poem for it. And so for Barkin, when he's looking at this, all these writings eventually lead to a lot of conspiracy theories. This is kind of where you have the reptilians with UFOs and conspiracy theories. And David, I don't know if it's Ick or Ike. I'm going with Ick because it sounds better. I-C-K-E. I-C-K-E. Okay, it's
Ick. That's Ick. Yeah.
So
if it wasn't, it is now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Sorry, that menthol is kicking in on my feet, and now my feet are really cold. So, obviously, there are arguments. Other historians argue that the origins come from legends that developed during the colonization of Africa. And I was able to find in find snake or serpent people in folklore in South Asian mythology, such as the Naga. And those creatures are half humans and half snake. And I kind of want to say we've covered the Naga before.
Which half is human and which half is snake?
Top is snake.
Stop it! Why is it always the top? Why can it not just be like a centaur, but a snake?
I'm pretty sure. Oh, no, what? Naga's flipped. Top half is human.
Okay.
Sorry.
I can get behind that. You know what?
It depends on which depiction.
Oh.
It's fine. We're not talking about them. I do feel like we've already talked about the Naga. I just can't remember what story, because I don't think it's actually... I can't find it on here.
Maybe we've touched on it.
I want to say I've touched on it. I just don't remember.
Because it does sound familiar.
But I don't remember if it was me or you. But I feel like it was me, because I very vaguely remember the reading on it. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
Okay.
So, you know, you have a lot of those. There are also some cryptids that reference lizard men. So I've already mentioned the Naga, which is way, like, that's Asian mythology. That one's an old, old one. And then there's also, like, the lizard man of Gape or Swamp, which I need to add to the drive.
Okay.
I'm not going to talk about it today, but we'll cover it one day. And then you also have, in today's society, reptilians that are associated with alien abductions. One of the earliest cases being that of Herbert Trimmer? Shermer. Sorry, I'm like reading this and going, how do you say his name? That's a case we haven't covered either, but spoiler, most believe it was a hoax anyways, so it doesn't come up very often, and it's fine. But, you know, you have a lot of different versions of these reptilians, of, you know, first of all, where they came from, secondly, you know, how they're interpreted today, and that type of stuff. So, they're not only associated with, like, abductions and just, you know, science fiction, fantasy, but they are also the center of David Icke's conspiracy theory. And I mentioned David earlier. He's actually a real big deal in this conspiracy theory because it's kind of his.
Oh.
As of today, he has supporters in around 47 countries. He has given lectures to large crowds of up to 6,000 people. And in the U.S. in 2013, a public poll indicated that 4% of registered voters believed in David's ideas.
I don't even know what his ideas are yet, and I'm terrified to find out.
His conspiracy also made the top 10 most popular conspiracy list.
Oh my gosh, I'm worried. Really worried.
So he publishes in 1999, The Biggest Secret. And this talked of tall, blood-drinking, shape-shifting reptilians. In his writing, these reptilians are from Alpha Draconis star system, which I did include a picture in there. I did not label it, but it's the one with stars.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. If I would have had to guess, that would have been my guess.
Yeah, it would have been a good guess. Now, these creatures, according to his writing, they're hiding underground in underground bases, just all over the place. And
here?
Just all over, yeah, on Earth, all over the place.
Okay, I didn't know if we were still in, what was it, Alpha Draconis?
No, yeah, no, they're from there. They're here on Earth.
Okay,
gotcha. Hiding in underground bases.
They're here in our sewers.
Yeah, they're sewer rats, it's fine. Sewer snakes. Ugh. And they are responsible for a worldwide conspiracy against humanity. So they're like trying to take down humanity. They're anti-human, I guess.
They're trying to take down humans, take us down to the sewers, Or take no, us down, like eradicate us.
Out, like eradicate.
Okay. Can I elect to go to the sewers instead?
I don't think so. That's their home.
Oh. Okay, final question. I'm sorry, and I know you're not going to know the answer. If they succeed in this goal that apparently has a lot of people that believe in it, if they succeed, do they move out of the sewers and come up here, or do they stay in the sewers?
That's what I assume, is they move out of the sewers, come up here. They're like, the last human's been eaten. They're gone.
This is our town now.
Yeah, they're not going to let you go to the sewers because they're blood drinking. Don't forget that, okay?
Oh, okay, yeah. Vampire.
Vampire-esque.
Vampire snake. Vampire snake reptiles. Gotcha.
They're reptilians, okay?
Okay.
So basically, this conspiracy, in a nutshell, reptilians are trying to take over the world. They're hiding underground in underground bases. And don't forget, they're shape-shifting so they can look like a human. You don't know what they look like all the time.
If they're shape-shifters, I'm very upset that the shape they choose more often than not is a human with a snake head.
Maybe that's their natural form. And so when they need a break from using their shape-shifting powers, that's kind of what they just go into.
I still hate it. I still feel like I would never use that shape. Well, that shape is an abomination.
You'd be like, I'm never done with this, like, never leaving this human shape. But you know what? For them, that's not, maybe we're the abominations for them, you know? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Oh, hold on. Now you're on to something.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is why they want to eradicate us.
Exactly. So David, he points to leaders of both modern and in ancient times that are supposedly related to reptilians or reptilians in some way. So you've got the Merovingian family, dynasty. Sorry, not family, dynasty. The Rothschild family, the Bush family, and the British royal family. They all have...
The American...
Yeah, the American Bushes. Bush family. Yeah.
Okay.
Those are just four of the examples. That's not even all of them.
Oh, okay. Who was from London?
The British royal family.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The British.
The British royal family, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, okay. I'm listening.
Queen Elizabeth, she clearly had something going on.
She did live a very long time.
And she ruled a very, you know what, I think I might be coming over to his side now. That's a little fishy.
I don't know, man. I don't want to go to their side.
I'm not on their side.
I'm staying out of the sewers.
Well, here's the issue. Is they're not going to let you in the sewers. They got to drink your blood.
They don't want my blood. I had tuberculosis, remember?
They don't care.
Is that just an extra spice?
You know what? Maybe they'll let you go to the sewers so that they can continue to drink your blood as you, like, regenerate it, right?
Oh, no. I don't like it.
Okay. Anyway, so a lot of people are just like, yeah, they've already infiltrated society. Like, they're some of our top leaders in the world. Now, when it comes to politics, there are some references to people being reptilian that have made the news in different ways. So in September 2003, Ontario, Canada was going through a provincial election. Ernie Eves, he issued a news release that called his opponent Dalton McGuinty as an, quote, evil reptilian kitten eater from another planet.
What? Wait.
He literally said this. Kitten eater.
Kitten eater. He said this?
He said this about his opponent.
This is...
In an interview.
Did he win?
I didn't even look it up, honestly.
Because, like, even if that man had just the worst policies, as soon as I heard those words leave his lips, I would be like, you're childish. I don't know.
Okay, well, hold on. So he basically stated after this, like, after this interview, after the end of the news release, he openly mentioned that it was meant as a joke, and yes, it was over the top, but he would refuse to apologize to his opponent, Dalton.
So, he didn't know the cameras were on.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And a lot of people... I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
What was that one more time?
An evil reptilian kitten eater from another planet.
An evil reptilian kitten eater from another planet. Okay, locked. Gotcha.
Okay, done. Can't wait to hear how you use it the first time.
I'll forget, but I'll try.
Okay. So a lot of people like heard this and that, you know, sparked their belief or strengthened their belief. Whatever.
In reptilians?
Yes.
Y'all, politics are wild. We gotta stop.
In 2008, during a Senate election in Minnesota, Al Franken and Norm Coleman, they're going to head-to-head, and one man, Lucas Davenport, he's a voter, right? He's registered, and he just didn't like either option. He's like, they both suck. And so he would write, like, a gag ballot that stated, lizard people in the write-in candidate space.
Oh, the entire people, not just, oh.
Yeah.
The whole race.
He's like, all of them, they're doing better, I guess. I don't know. He obviously did this as, like, a joke. Like, it was a gag. But this ballot ended up being challenged by Coleman because when it was counted, the ballot was counted in the count for Al Franken.
What?
Yeah.
Pardon me?
So, like, he puts in, so Davenport, Lucas Davenport, puts in this gag ballot. They count it for Al Franken, and Coleman comes back and goes, hold on. I'm gonna challenge this one.
If that got through, I feel like you should challenge a lot more.
I know, right?
I want a complete and total recount.
I want to be there checking the write-in candidates, mm-hmm. Okay? So that's one that also made the news. February 2011, the Opie and Anthony radio show would interview Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld, sorry. The host, Louis C.K., he would jokingly ask Donald, the former U.S. Secretary of Defense, by the way, he would ask Donald Rumsfeld if he and Dick Cheney were lizard people.
Oh.
You know.
Are they?
Well, he also would ask, do you guys enjoy the taste of human flesh? And Rumsfeld, he wouldn't answer the question directly. He would kind of deflect. And he would never say yes or no. And so CK, he keeps pushing, and then he would kind of muse that, you know what, Rumsfeld, his refusal to answer could be an admission of guilt. Like, he's obviously joking around to some extent, but he continues by stating, like, maybe the lizard people or the reptilians, they can't lie about being lizard people or reptilians, so they either have to answer yes to the question or avoid answering. And that's why Rumsfeld wasn't answering.
I like this rationale.
Yeah.
So yeah. They are lizard people.
Yep. So Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. I couldn't think of his first name, by the way.
I need to Google him.
So apparently they are lizard people or reptilians. Now, March 4th, 2013, a video would surface that seemed to depict a security guard with strange features that was on guard during a speech by Barack Obama. This led to a Wired report about shape-shifting reptilians. In response, the chief of National Security Council, the spokesperson Caitlin Hayden, she would state, quote, any alleged program to guard the president with aliens or robots would likely have to be scaled back or eliminated in the sequester. And the sequester was like a budget cut, basically, at the time. So she addressed it and was like, oh, we're going to have to scale that back when we do the sequester.
I think that was an honest... I think she played that off, but that was true.
Okay, you know what, though? I feel bad for that guard. Maybe he was just having like a bad skin reaction to something. I feel for him, okay? I know what my feet look like right now, and they don't look like human feet, okay? We didn't talk about this. Nobody has heard this. We'll talk about it next week. But what if
for right now, y'all don't get to know. Just know that my feet are wild.
They are wild right now. I'm assuming pregnancy and allergy related. It doesn't matter, okay? But what if he was just having like a really bad day and like maybe he has eczema and his skin was looking a little rough. And you guys are going, huh, he looks really weird.
That poor guy. I really hope he doesn't have the internet.
Oh, I'm sure
that could be my little lizard man one day.
I'm telling you, you better just get him used to it.
Well, I mean, I call him my lizard man. We're working on it.
He'll be fine. Until the day a girl goes, hey, lizard man.
And I'll be like, you can't call him. He is mama's iguana, not yours.
Not yours. Back off.
No. You get your own lizard man.
And she's going to be like, well, I'm working on it.
Get him somewhere else.
Okay. Anyway, so that was that for 2013. In October of 2022.
Hold on, this is getting real close.
This is the last one. Okay. And this one's not too crazy, honestly. Theory about it. He would state during a podcast that he believes the world is being governed by evil reptiles. It's like he openly is telling people on this podcast, yeah, the world's being governed, we're being ruled by all these evil reptiles. And he just basically what I'm getting from all of this is that the reason all of our candidates suck for everything is because they're just reptilians.
This sounds like a podcast I could listen to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All our candidates suck because they are against us and they want to suck our blood.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Now, there is another theory reptilians are often involved in or referenced in, and this is the ancient astronauts. I don't know if you've heard about that conspiracy theory.
I have not.
So I am not going far into details on this one. And that is because I'm going to do a deep dive on this. I've already started reading. Cody has been asking me to cover this for an eternity, and I keep telling him, you don't listen, why would I cover your requests?
Fair.
Valid point. Thank you. Yep. So I will do this. But essentially, this is the idea that intelligent extraterrestrial beings have visited Earth, made contact with humans during ancient or prehistoric times. And a lot of times you'll hear like the seven wonders of the world, Stonehenge and the pyramids, all of that referenced in this conspiracy theory.
Okay. I have heard of that. I didn't know it had a, well, I guess I knew it had a name. I didn't know that was the name. Well, was it ancient aliens?
Ancient astronauts.
Ancient astronauts. Okay.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Close enough. But that is what I could find specific to alien reptilian information. Aside from what I've said, I would cover later. I also kept it short because I knew Amanda's was a little bit longer.
My favorite thing about this entire story that you did is the picture that you put up that says it's a like a poster at a rally. And it says, do we really need another reptilian shapeshifter as president? And it has a cute little drawing of a green lizard.
Yep, it sure does. I forgot I put that one on, honestly. But
and it looks like it's at a Trump rally because there's something about Trump on another one in the background. So
something Trump. Pro, I can't tell what it says.
Yeah, I don't know, but I would like one of these posters.
I think you can make them.
Oh, is that all I have to do? Oh, yeah. Well, I can't draw a lizard.
I bet you anything you could. Yeah, I was going to say you could print it off.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to do. Yeah, and then you could have whatever. I think this is an anti-Trump rally that it's at because I've heard a lot of people also reference Trump as being a reptilian.
I thought he was just really tan.
No, that's just his, that's him hiding the scales.
Oh,
he's, okay. He's really just not great at shape-shifting into human form, but they're like, yeah, someone needs a really orange president one day. Send him us.
Hi, we want one.
Apparently that's us.
just give us your worst wig and your orangest lizard, please. Thanks.
So basically what happened is they were like, the lizard people, because, you know, they're in underground bases. They don't have windows. They got him ready. And they're like, yeah, that's doable. But then when he went out in the sun, it was just too late. And they're like,
ooh. It was the wrong shade.
Yeah. They're like, his toupee is not laying just right.
Yeah. They don't have wind down there.
Yeah. So it's a little rough for them down there. They're just trying to live life.
Look, I've gotten the wrong shade of foundation before. And I had coworkers keep asking me if I was jaundiced. So I feel your struggle.
That's more yellow, not orange, though.
Yeah, but it was not my tone. It was not my shade. So I feel that struggle. The only difference is I corrected my error And he just went for it.
He went. He's like, look, they've already seen me this way. I can't just change it, guys. Yeah. And they're like, oh my God, we sent him up. But he's doing a great job, I guess. I don't know if people believe he's a reptilian. He's doing a great job for the reptilians.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that is my story on the reptilians.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah. Like I said, I kept it pretty short, and I did that intentionally. Just because I knew, first of all, I knew Amanda. She's like, it's going to get brutal in the second part.
Yeah.
And so I was like, so I have to find something lighthearted.
Thanks.
So I did reptilians, and then I was like, if it's going to get brutal, it's probably going to be long. So what I'm saying is you guys are welcome. Let us know if you believe that reptilians are our unknown overlords.
Let us know what you think about our reptilian palate cleanser.
So just let us know. Just tell us something. You know, yeah. It's not like we're asking a lot. I'm going to get a call from my dad. I can feel it. I feel it in every bone in my body right now. Anyways, well, thank you all for listening to Helen Heels Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Helen Heels Podcast, X Helen Heels Pod, or Facebook, Helen Heels Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Helen Heels Podcast. If you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create more content for you, you can donate through Patreon, where we're working to release our specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions or words of encouragement, please email us at helenheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.